Hello, America and the world. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay. We are behind the lines of socialism, my friends, and Radio Free Market is the voice of free people and free markets. Today we are creating this show within the Mises Institute in Auburn, Alabama, and we're using their very new studio that was created due to the generous contribution of Mr. and Mrs. Quentin and Marion Ward. So this show today is going to be a very big surprise to a lot of you, because we're going to have fun talking about accounting. But seriously, our topic today is Conquered by Accountants, How Changes in Accounting Can Threaten Our Freedom. Today I'm happy to welcome our special guest, Mr. Warren Miller. Welcome, Warren.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have you here. So, folks, Warren is a CPA who, along with his wife, own a business, and I'm going to give them a plug here. It's called Beckmill Research, LLC, and their website is beckmill.com. And what they do in that business is they tell businesses what those businesses are worth. That's about right.
That is exactly right.
Okay, good. So I'm going to try to strip a lot of jargon out of this, because we want people to actually listen to the show.
Let me elaborate just very quickly on the valuation of a private company.
Sure.
Valuing a private company is very different from valuing a public company.
Uh-huh.
It's fairly easy to take the number of shares outstanding for a public company, multiply it by the share price, and bingo, you have an estimate, at least at a minority level.
Uh-huh.
For private companies, there are no markets. There are no active markets for the securities.
Uh-huh.
And the question becomes, how much is that company worth? It may arise in the context of a high-dollar divorce. The judge wants to know, because it's a
mm-hmm.
marital asset.
Mm-hmm.
A company may want to prepare itself for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Shareholders may get into litigation against one another. If you don't die in 2010, gift and estate taxes can certainly be an issue. So there's a variety of reasons to value.
Oh, good. Well, you know, our story today really starts with the financial meltdown in 2008. As I say, everybody is trying to figure out what happened in that particular situation. But behind the scenes, in fact, way behind the scenes, there have been a lot of manipulations of data, and there is a real live international battle on how to tell this story of accounting, you know, to the public. You know, so let's start with this. You know, folks, they pay their taxes, and they think everybody adds and subtracts the same way, but they don't, do they?
No, they really don't. And one of the popular misconceptions about accounting is that it has something to do with math.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't.
Okay.
Any more than actuarial science has anything to do with math.
All right.
Adding and subtracting is pretty simple stuff, and if accounting were that simple, I'm not sure I'd have a job.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue is how do we account for transactions? How do we present revenues that a firm earns and expenses that it incurs, mm-hmm. and how assets and liabilities are presented on financial statements.
Okay, so why should people even care about this?
Well, ultimately, in my view, the issue could impact and could well impact, and I'm not an alarmist, but it could impact our standard of living in America. Right now, American companies, public and private, are under a set of accounting standards called Generally Accepted Accounting Principles.
And folks, if you're going to be listening to the show, you better get used to it. We're going to start using some acronyms. So this one is called GAAP.
This is called GAAP.
G-A-A-P.
G-A-A-P.
That's General Accounting.
Generally Accepted.
Accepted.
Accounting Principles.
All right. There you go.
And the primary source of wisdom on GAAP is the Financial Accounting Standards Board,
which we call the
FASB.
FASB, or F-A-S-B.
Right.
Okay.
FASB.
All right.
There is a move afoot that publicly began in the waning days of the Bush administration under SEC Chairman Chris Cox to convert, U.S. accounting standards from GAAP to what's called IFRS.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a minute, folks, so stay with us. This is Radio Free Market. I'm your host, Michael McKay. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay, and I am talking with Mr. Warren Miller, and we're talking about accounting standards and why they are important to you. So we were just talking about this Financial Accounting Standards Board, this FASB, that actually really sets these standards in place.
Correct.
Okay, so that's really their function. So they're really the ones that actually set the rules. Do they change the rules?
They do change the rules because the nature of the problems evolve and change. The problems in an advanced industrial economy like that of the United States are very different from those of an emerging nation.
So they actually change for multiple reasons. One is because conditions change, new kind of things happen.
Technology.
But also there's political pressures.
Lots and lots of political pressure.
Okay, so we're going to kind of zip into that in just a minute. But what we're really talking about here and the real focus of this particular show is going to be there's a move afoot to eliminate this FASB, this Financial Accounting Standards Board, and replace it with an International Standards Board.
That is correct. It's called the International Accounting Standards Board, IASB.org. And IASB oversees a set of accounting standards called International Financial Reporting Standards,
okay.
IFRS, another acronym pronounced IFRS.
Okay. So why shouldn't there be uniformity in these accounting standards around the world? Sounds like a good idea on the surface.
It's really seductive. It's a lot like the UN. It just sounds like a terrific idea to have, comparability across countries around the world in how financial statements are presented. It should facilitate financial analysis. It should make markets more efficient. It should take the gap out of gap, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really sounds like a great idea. Unfortunately, like a lot of things these days, it sounds like a great idea. The devil is in the details.
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular case, the details consist of the big four global accounting firms,
mm-hmm.
Who see tens of billions of dollars of accounting fees lying out there for the taking,
mm-hmm.
to help their clients convert from GAAP to
IFRS. That would lower their costs.
It would certainly lower their costs because they'd only have to deal with one set of accounting standards,
sure.
around the world, at least on the surface.
But you contend that this is really more of a power grab.
That is correct. Yeah,
okay.
And I'm not a conspiracy guy. I'm not a truther. I believe in free societies. Conspiracies are awfully hard to pull off. The President of the United States can't keep his top three or four staffers quiet. How on earth are you going to pull off a conspiracy worldwide?
Right.
It's not going to happen.
But, there is this confluence of influences.
There is a confluence. There is a confluence of interest among the big four accounting firms,
mm-hmm.
Aided and abetted by some academic idealists and some policymakers who, frankly, have no idea what they're talking
about.
Well,
I was just going to enter that. It's also really, promulgated by the ignorance. The public is woefully and unfortunately, and please, all listeners here, please don't take this personally, but, primarily everybody is pretty darn illiterate about this.
Well, when you have college graduates who have difficulty and sometimes are unable to reconcile their checking accounts, we got problems.
Yeah, right. But, even people who are business owners, they don't really understand this.
They really don't because they focus on the operating side of the business, and accounting is kind of an afterthought.
Well, actually, it's a farmed out thought.
Frequently it is a farmed out thought.
Right.
That is,
I don't want to. I own a business, and I am always talking to my accountants.
Right.
And half the time I'm asking them to explain different things to me.
Exactly.
And I know how to read a balance sheet.
Sure.
I know how to do these various things.
Right.
And I actually understand, what you're talking about.
You bet.
You can throw these acronyms around. And yet, these kinds of subtle details escape, me as
they
well.
They do.
And so this was why I asked Warren to be on the show today, folks, because I think that what he's really presenting is so vital for everybody to try to get a grip on. You know, it's really very important that we understand.
Let me give, if you don't mind, an example of an accounting problem.
Sure.
Let's assume that back in 30 years ago, you bought a barrel of oil.
Mm-hmm.
Bought it for $3, you put it in your garage.
Mm-hmm.
In 1980, mm-hmm. you bought another barrel of oil, only this time the cost was $40.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of 1986, oil prices had fallen a great deal, and you sold one of those barrels of oil, and you don't know which one,
mm-hmm.
for $12.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it was a $3 barrel of oil, you made $9.
Mm-hmm.
If it was the $40 barrel of oil, you lost $28.
Mm-hmm.
If you take an average, you still lost $9.50 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And these are inventory valuation questions.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue of what's called last in, first out, that $40 barrel,
mm-hmm.
Keeps taxes lower in inflation economies.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the
Well, go ahead, but I'm going to ask you to come back and explain that last in, first out thing.
And the United States is the only country on the planet that has last in, first out as a viable accounting alternative.
You know, this is a really important feature because I remember studying accounting years ago, and this LIFO, FIFO, again, mm-hmm. we got into the acronyms, but, you know, these are really easy to remember, folks, and they're important for you to understand. And using his example, FIFO is first in, first out.
That $3 barrel.
That $3 barrel of oil. Last in, first out is...
That $40 barrel of oil.
That $40 barrel of oil. And you're saying that the United States...
It's the only country on the planet that allows last in, first out inventory valuation for accounting presentation.
That's very significant. Tell us more of why that's so significant.
The reason that's significant is that in most countries of the world, inflation, not deflation, is the rule.
Mm-hmm.
So there are generally rising prices.
Uh-huh.
That comes primarily from the Great Depression, when the mistakes made by the Federal Reserve contracted the money supply and actually brought on a period of falling prices,
mm-hmm.
which put 25% of the nation's labor force out of work.
Mm-hmm.
So central bankers in general follow a policy of low inflation.
Mm-hmm.
If they can keep it to 1 or 2%, prices will double every, you know, 35 or 40 or 50 years, and they figure everybody can live with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a higher rate of inflation, then if that $3 barrel of oil, for instance, that you sold for $12.50 or for $12, a lot of that $9 is just pure inflation. It's not profit.
Mm-hmm.
And so the government reaps tax revenues by creating inflation.
That's absolutely beautiful.
It's a very vicious circle.
Right.
And they have a vested interest in inflation.
Right. This is why we call inflation the hidden tax.
It is a hidden tax. Now, in some aspects of our Internal Revenue Code, we do have indexing. You know,
mm-hmm.
personal exemptions are indexed. The Schedule A deduction ceiling is indexed. The tax brackets are indexed,
mm-hmm.
And that came in only after a lot of fighting between Republicans and Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And so the government is the primary beneficiary of inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And in response to this, last-in, first-out accounting
mm-hmm.
in a period of rising prices will reduce profits, and when you reduce profits, you reduce tax revenues.
Uh-huh.
And the U.S. Is the only nation on the face of the earth that allows last-in, first-out accounting for financial reporting purposes.
Well, you know, this is actually really good news. At least there's at least an accounting method that it's in our favor, even though we're being, you know, subjected to this, you know, this planned inflation, which,
indeed.
You know, I constantly rail on here.
Yes.
And that, I think, is really one of the worst aspects of what's going on. So I really think that was an excellent explanation of that.
Let me carry it one further, if
sure.
you don't mind, Michael.
Absolutely.
The budget for fiscal year 2011... the one that would end September 30th, 2011, that has been proposed by the Obama administration, would abolish LIFO.
Mm.
And as old Ev Dirksen used to say, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon it adds up to real money.
I think he had to change it to trillion.
Yeah, well, in this case, the Obama administration estimates that eliminating LIFO would increase federal tax revenues by $59.1 billion a year, and that's in the president's budget.
Gracious. So they just change a little rule.
Change a little rule, and
everybody gets to pay more.
And
taxes.
Everybody gets to pay more. That's right.
That's amazing. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I want to just summarize this one point here, that this Federal Accounting Standards Board, this FASB.
Financial Accounting Standards Board.
Thank you very much.
It's not a government agency.
Right, okay. But they are the primary
source
of what this general accounting, generally accepted accounting standards are.
Correct.
And so their independence is very important.
Absolutely.
And we know that they're compromised, and you and I have talked about this
before. They are compromised, but the good news is they're in Norwalk, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you can go see them.
Mm-hmm. And Americans can actually get educated about them and actually make noise about them.
That is correct. They have a full-featured website at FASB.org. No
mm-hmm.
registration required.
Mm-hmm.
Poke around to your heart's content.
Okay, that's very good. Well, folks, we're going to be coming up to the end of this particular segment. When we come back, we're going to actually talk a little bit more about how this actually impacts the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission. And this is a really important segment coming up. So please stay with us. This is Radio Free Market. I'm your host, Michael McKay, and I'm looking forward to talking with you in just a minute. Welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay, and with me is Warren Miller, and we're talking about the absolutely fascinating topic of accounting and why this is very important to us, you know, because otherwise we are actually likely to be conquered by accountants. And I don't want to use accountants in a pejorative way. I actually would like to say these people that are issuing these standards.
Accounting standards.
Yeah, the accounting standards. So now we want to talk about the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission, which was formulated in
1933. Actually, there are two big acts, the 33 Act and the 34 Act.
And it has the statutory authority to set the financial reporting standards. So let's talk about this, and how does this impact this international standards?
It's a circuitous connection. But the 34 Securities and Exchange Commission Act empowers the SEC and the U.S. to set accounting standards. From the beginning, the SEC has deferred to the private sector on the setting of accounting standards. Initially, the body was the Accounting Principles Board.
Mm-hmm.
In 1973, the Accounting Principles Board gave way to what we know today as FASB.
Mm-hmm.
FASB until 2 years ago had seven board members.
Mm-hmm.
They are appointed by the trustees of the Financial Accounting Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
SEC has veto power. As a practical matter, it's never exercised that veto power.
So the SEC really has a veto power over this Financial Accounting Standards Board.
That's correct.
All right, so that's a very, very key thing. And now, in a rather remarkable situation of trying to basically give up our sovereignty of our own rules,
mm-hmm.
it's basically looking at abdicating these rules and the overseership of these rules to an international agency.
Yes, that is correct, Michael. It began in August of 2008, about 5 months before the Bush administration rode off into the sunset. And SEC Chairman Chris Cox, mm-hmm. for whatever reasons, working with his staff, published what's called the roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a timetable with milestones that would convert generally accepted accounting principles in the United States with international financial reporting standards.
So basically, the SEC is really giving up its authority over the overseership of this to this international body. That's what it is actually laid out a roadmap of how to give up its own authority.
Yeah, the SEC, as a practical matter, would not go out of business because...
Oh, we know that.
because there are governance mechanisms within the International Accounting Standards Board mm-hmm. that would have the chairman of the U.S. SEC sitting in a position of some power. He or she would be one member of five, however.
Okay, so it's only giving up 80% of its...
Only 80%.
Okay.
Yeah,
I just wanted to make that clear.
So what's a few percentage points a month, Frank?
Of course, right? We're really just talking about the accounting standards, but of course those are the basic rules by which we're going to play.
That affect everybody's 401ks.
Yeah. And everything
start
else.
With 401ks.
Sure. Absolutely.
You want to bring it home. Most Americans these days, except for government employees and a few old-line public companies, are under defined contribution pension
right.
plans rather than defined benefit plans.
Right, right. Exactly.
So the changes in accounting standards affect your 401k.
Right. So, if you're older, it's going to affect your retirement.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. So, this is a very important thing about this whole situation. Let's go to a side story, because as this was all unfolding in August 27th, 2008, there was another story going on at the SEC, and that was the Madoff story.
Yeah, except it wasn't going on at the SEC very much. The Madoff heist had broken by that time, mm-hmm. but Boston financial expert, who later became a fraud investigator, mm-hmm. And now has a new book out that mm-hmm. was got a really kind of a nasty review this past week from the Wall Street Journal, but not from the Journal itself, a guy who used to work there and mm-hmm. is a big government guy, but in any event. But Harry Markopoulos had sent a series of increasingly lengthy emails over the years to the Boston office of the Securities and Exchange Commission, citing chapter and verse of how Bernie Madoff's 10% annual returns that had been going since Moby Dick was a minnow were actually impossible. Mm-hmm. It could not have had an unbroken string like that. It was impossible. Mm-hmm. And the last email he sent was 19 pages long, and it was sent in 2005, and he got a two-word response from the Boston office of the SEC. Thank you.
Wow. Now, of course, at that this time when the story broke, the SEC was – hair on fire about this particular story, and you used a funny analogy.
To be worrying about an IFRS roadmap while Madoff is on the loose is kind of like worrying about your hairstyle when your feet are on fire. I mean, talk about misplaced priorities.
Really, that's amazing. All right, folks, we're going to be coming up to another break here in just a minute, but when we come back, we're going to talk about this this story that gets deeper and deeper as we go along on the SEC and these accounting standards and why this is important to you. So this is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay, and we will be back in just a minute, so please stay with us. Talk to you. Welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay, and with me is Mr. Warren Miller, and we are going to be talking about continuing our conversation about accounting standards and why they are vitally important for you to know about. So we were just talking about the SEC, and we were talking about how there was this disastrous event that happened with the Madoff affair, and how that was a big distraction for the SEC. But the SEC really has had its focus on trying to get us involved in these international accounting standards.
That is correct.
Okay. And so now when Mr. Cox left the SEC,
correct,
he was replaced by Mary Shapiro.
Mary Shapiro.
Okay. And then she gets to appoint her own
chief accountant.
Now this chief accountant, tell us this story, because this is a very important story.
The chief accountant in the enforcement section of the SEC is probably the most powerful accountant you never heard of. it is a position of enormous clout. Any career accountant would give her or his right arm to have that job, A, because it's a terrifically interesting job, B, it has enormous power associated with it, and C, one's career afterwards can be pretty toning.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty
okay.
Tony.
All right, so she had to make a choice between two individuals that were going to fill this position.
She started off with about a half a dozen candidates, and over time the word leaked out. It boiled down to two.
Mm-hmm.
And these were two gentlemen with very different views of how accounting should be done in the United States. Barely 2 weeks before Chris Cox left office, he appointed an acting chief accountant,
mm-hmm.
and that acting chief accountant was one of the two finalists, and his name is Jim Croker.
Mm-hmm.
Croker was a former partner in one of the big four public accounting firms.
Okay. Very capable
guy. The very capable, knowledgeable, relatively young man, barely
mm-hmm.
40.
Mm-hmm.
University of Nebraska degree, mm-hmm. Very capable, very knowledgeable, but had been with this big four accounting firm since almost the day he got out of college.
And he was for these international standards.
As you would expect from his employment affiliation, he was unambiguously for IFRS.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
The second finalist was a fellow in his mid-50s, a man I know and mm-hmm. can speak highly of, Jack Sezelski of Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Jack publishes and has published for a number of years the Accounting Analysts Observer.
Mm-hmm.
AccountingObserver.com has a nice blog. It's a freebie. Jack's newsletter goes out to corporate clients who pay a five-figure annual subscription for Jack's newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
He is, in my opinion, the single most knowledgeable man on the face of the earth when it comes to generally accepted accounting principles.
And he was opposed to this.
Very much opposed, pardon me, very much opposed to the conversion to international financial reporting standards.
Why was he opposed to it?
I've talked with Jack about this. He thought it was a power grab
mm-hmm.
By the big four mm-hmm. Accounting firms. He thought it would make accounting standard setters less responsive,
mm-hmm.
More remote, more out of touch, more susceptible to political pressure, and FASB is susceptible to political pressure, but mm-hmm. at least you know where the pressure is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And in the United States, you know, we can do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
In the international context, we have only one vote, and our ability to do something about it is very limited.
It would have been a big incentive for him to actually get right in line and back this thing up.
It's a tribute to Jack Sezelski that he didn't. Most of his corporate clients are undoubtedly global corporations. Many of these international companies, GEs and the rest of them, are very much for this conversion. And they're for it for several reasons, but the most obvious one is they figure that they can put more money in their own individual pockets as a result. In other words, they see opportunities to game that system. Opportunities that are much harder to come by under the more restrictive, generally accepted accounting principles here in the United States.
So actually, Ms. Shapiro, she went ahead and appointed Mr. Croker.
After 6 months of dithering, mm-hmm. she finally caved and appointed Mr. Croker,
mm-hmm.
and there was an audible groan among those of us in the anti-IFRS camp, just as surely as there was an audible hooray from the big four accounting firms.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mr. Croker has moved quickly to try to put the roadmap back on track.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in fairness to Chairwoman Shapiro, he has not moved with the alacrity with which Chris Cox perhaps might have liked.
Mm-hmm.
She is slowing this thing down. If it happens, it won't happen until I think the last estimate I saw was for the biggest companies, and they would be the first to make the conversion, 2015.
Okay.
Now, obviously, the cost of converting an accounting system for a global company like General Electric, like Microsoft, like ExxonMobil, is huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge. It's mm-hmm. in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And not one of them is going to start the conversion
mm-hmm.
until they are sure that this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Chairman Cox suggested at one point that some U.S. companies volunteer to do it
mm-hmm.
So that they could kind of show the way. Nobody volunteered. They said it costs too much money. We're not going to sock our shareholders with this cost
mm-hmm.
just to amuse the chairman of the SEC.
And it's going to increase their taxes as well.
Absolutely going to increase. Well, in this particular case, it probably lowered their taxes because their expenses would go up, which would reduce profits.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Now,
on the short term.
In the short term,
but
now,
long term, it's going to increase.
As a practical matter, any company that was doing LIFO, obviously, their taxes are going up big time.
Okay.
So that is certainly true.
So let's connect this to Obamacare. Let's talk about the connection with this whole conversation topic with Obamacare. How do you see that?
It's top-down stuff. It's in free societies, change doesn't come from the top. It comes from the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
If we had been waiting on IBM to invent the personal computer, we would still be waiting.
Mm-hmm.
It would have never, ever happened. And just as surely as some of Google's innovations would have never happened had we been waiting on Microsoft to bring them to the fore. Any athletic coach will tell you that it's easier to become number one than it is to stay number one.
Mm-hmm.
When the heavens have opened up and money is cascading on people, the last thing they want to do is change.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why the Austrian economist Joseph Schumpeter referred to capitalism as a system of creative destruction.
Right.
We renew ourselves by destroying what we had before.
Right.
And it's all about innovation. Innovation, again, is bottom-up. It is not top-down.
Right.
And what we will see if Obamacare comes to pass, and as we speak today, it's hanging fire in the U.S. Congress, but if Obamacare comes to pass, we will see much higher costs. We will see, actually, our children and grandchildren will have lower life expectancies than we, their parents, and their grandparents.
Well, I want to get into that the implications that this has at the street level in more in just a minute. But you brought up a very good point about the spontaneous order.
Spontaneous order.
Right.
And again, this is bottom-up stuff. This
right.
is the Austrian economist, Fritz von Hayek.
Friedrich Hayek.
Okay. Yes. Called it grown order. Grown
mm-hmm.
order. And he contrasted that with made order,
mm-hmm.
which he labeled from the Greek taxis, T-A-X-I-S, which sounds terribly much like taxes, T-A-X-E-S, to me. But in any event, he pointed out that the more complex the issue, the more that that grown order, bottom-up order, was necessary because the complexities and the changes could not be successfully dealt with by an all-knowing, omniscient, centralized power or authority.
We have so much complexity now.
That's correct.
The IRS code, 65,000.
65,000 plus pages, that's
and,
right.
And I mean, it's incomprehensible.
I'm a CPA, and I wouldn't be caught dead doing my own tax return. We don't do tax returns anyway, but the complexity is just daunting.
It's amazing, daunting. Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, I also want to interject this one comment that you put in your paper here from Hayek's The Road to Serfdom.
Yeah.
And you make this, Hayek makes this point, as the scale increases, the amount of agreement on the order of ends decreases, and the necessity to rely on force and compulsion grows.
That is really true, and thank you for bringing that quote out, Michael. If you look on the IASB website, they trumpet the fact that 120 countries have adopted international financial reporting standards, and you know, Democrats on Capitol Hill, kind of like Obamacare, are saying, well, gee, what's wrong with us? Well, you know, what IASB doesn't tell us is that virtually all of those 120 countries have not embraced IFRS fully. They have embraced parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the global accounting firm PricewaterhouseCoopers publishes an annual volume of differences between GAAP and IFRS. And the most recent one, which came out, I think, in August of 2009, was a mere 220 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 220 pages of small print.
You know, this top-down problem is very clear. You mentioned this also in your paper about the Soviet Union. They were a top-down organization.
The Soviet Union, Cuba, North Korea, top-down does not work.
Mm-hmm.
The verdict of
history
is clear.
Talk about Greece. Talk about what's going on right now with Greece.
It's too bad that the problems of Greece are not receiving greater play in the United States. What is happening in Greece is the leading edge of the entitlement rage, as I call it. The Greek government has discovered that it cannot meet the promises. It can't keep the promises that its entitlement programs have made to Greek citizens.
Mm-hmm.
That, in turn, has caused a gigantic rise in the interest rates that the Greek government has to pay to borrow money internationally.
Mm-hmm.
The Greek government's response is to try to cut back in entitlements.
Mm-hmm.
The response of the Greek people is to take to the streets and scream bloody murder.
Right. Well, they got 120% of their GDP.
They have 120% of GDP is their debt. The country's debt is 120% of GDP. In the United States right now, we are running about 80% of GDP, but that percentage is forecast to continue to rise with or without Obamacare.
And, of course, there are other countries lined up right behind it.
The good news for the United States where entitlements is concerned is we are going to see the societal chaos that results from these promises that cannot possibly be kept. We're going to see it in Europe before it hits the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And with luck, we'll have some politicians with some spine who will do what they should do.
Yep. And, of course, we have some disasters waiting to happen in California and Illinois and New York.
You see states, teetering on the verge of bankruptcy. There's a proposed constitutional amendment that Mike Pence and Jeb Hensarling are talking about introducing that would restrain federal spending to 20% of GDP. One of the opponents of that said, well, gee whiz, if the states get in trouble, the feds can't bail them out. As far as I'm concerned, that's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring accountability home instead of pushing it away. Let's have it with local and state officials whom we can hold accountable, and we can solve these problems. I don't have any doubt about our ability to solve these problems if the government will just let us do that.
Is this going to hit? If this goes through, is this going to hit small companies worse than big companies, big companies worse than small companies?
The American Institute of CPAs, whose primary constituency is those four big global accounting firms, has long pushed for a small company version of generally accepted accounting principles. It's called Little Gap, and there's been this Big Gap, Little Gap controversy going on for more than 10 years. AICPA has never been able to put it across, but it is like the government relentless and it doesn't give up. International Financial Reporting Standards now have, as of August 2009, a small company version of IFRS. Mm-hmm. There is that out there. And the idea was to curry favor and attract support from small business owners. Mm-hmm. It sounds, again, like a good idea. The problem is you have more complexity. Even with IFRS under that, you would have two sets of accounting standards. Mm-hmm. Bankers, talk to any banker. Does a banker want to have more than one set of accounting standards? And the answer to any banker with any sense is no. Every banker I know has said one is more than plenty.
Absolutely. So in the time we have left in this particular segment, talk about the U.S. financial meltdown and how this impacted.
There's some IFRS proponents say the meltdown in the United States would have never happened if we'd been under IFRS instead of under GAAP. That is bogus. The meltdown here was high, because of the correlation among economic performance of countries around the world now, mm-hmm. Principally due to communications and electronic markets, hit Europe very hard. Mm-hmm. Hit Europe very hard. It hit the United States very hard. It arguably hit them less hard because their government is already very intrusive. Mm-hmm. At the time it hit here, federal spending was 20% of GDP. The current fiscal year is 25%. President Obama proposes it go to 30% in fiscal 2011.
Yeah, well, we know it's only
more spending means less freedom. It's that simple.
Absolutely. Okay, folks, we're going to come to the end of this particular segment, and we will be back in just a minute, so please stay with us. This is Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay, and I will be with you with my guest, Warren Miller, right after the break. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay, and with me, Mr. Warren Miller, and we're talking about these very important accounting standards that most people are not aware of, that everyone has to have at least a working knowledge about. You know, one of the things that I was really shocked to read when I read your paper is that there's actually going to be a lower level of transparency as a result of this move to move us to this international standard.
That is correct, Michael, and I believe that's one of the reasons that global corporations really like this idea. Mm-hmm. The fact is that societies around the world do not have the tradition of transparency and truth-telling mm-hmm. that we in the United States have. Mm-hmm. Those are cultural traits that vary, as Thomas Sowell has written about so eloquently in his great book called Migration.
Well, this is going to reduce the trust in U.S. securities.
A lower level of transparency will reduce trust. Right. And when trust goes down, people look for ways to police behavior on sure. the other side of a transaction. You know, right. They do it through contracts. They do it a number of monitoring devices, all of which increase costs.
Right.
Increase costs. With a lower level of transparency, we have less trust. Presumably, seems very reasonable to me, we have a lower level of efficiency
sure.
In markets.
Mm-hmm.
That, in turn, increases volatility, which increases risk, mm-hmm. which increases interest rates.
Right.
Ultimately, our rate of economic growth has to decline because of higher interest rates.
So that basically means a reduction in our standard of living.
And ultimately, our standard of living declines. Mm-hmm. The vision for IFRS is a vision for a European-style economy of permanently high unemployment, a permanently greater presence of government in your life, less freedom for everybody, and a lower standard of living.
Well, that's going to be a real mouthful for people to swallow.
And it's one of those things, and one of the reasons I'm so delighted to be here is it's one of those things that is below the radar screen.
Mm-hmm.
People think of accounting and they kind of yawn.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, accounting is a terrifically interesting, very controversial place for one to be these days.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing is that most accountants are not weren't drawn to accounting because they love controversy. They weren't drawn to accounting because they love intellectual fist fights.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be go along, get along, peace loving people.
Mm-hmm.
My colleagues are great colleagues, but I'm an outlier in that distribution. There's no two ways about that.
Well, you know, I think the bottom line for everyone to hear is that this is going to actually increase costs to consumers.
Yes.
Is going to probably increase unemployment.
Yes.
And it's probably going to, as you say, reduce our overall standard of living.
No two ways about it.
So, you know, in the remaining minute or so that we have left in the show, what do you advise people to do?
The first thing you have to do, in my opinion, is ask your congressional representative if he or she knows about the move from GAAP to IFRS. There's even a new ad out from the fifth or sixth biggest accounting firm called BDO Seidman.
Okay.
I saw it on Fox a couple of nights ago.
Okay, so we're going to have to
get after your congressional representative.
Okay, and I'm going to refer everybody to your website. That's Beckmill, BECKMILL.com. Go get this particular paper, folks. It's on that website. It's in available free for PDF download. And the bottom line about this is
we are looking at more intrusion and less freedom and a lower standard of living.
Okay.
Watch
so
your 401k.
We all need to get educated on this, folks, and I want everybody to know more about this. This is Radio Free Market. I am your host, Michael McKay. And please visit us on the web at radiofreemarket.com. Thank you for listening to us today, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you very much.